when Jesus warned the man, "Sin no more, lest a worse thing come unto thee." John 5:14. He confirmed the doctrine that all the calamities of life are caused by man's sin and disobedience to the royal law of God, which is founded upon the principle, "Do unto others as you would want them to do unto you." On the question that the disciples of Jesus asked, that is, "Master, who did sin?" See Soul Evolution, Reincarnation, and Soul Development. The commentary Barnes notes writes that it was a universal opinion among the Jews that calamities of all kinds were the effects of sin. The case, however, of this man was that of one that was blind from his birth, and it was a question which the disciples could not determine whether it was his fault or that of his parents. Many of the Jews, as it appears from their writings, see Lightfoot, believed in the doctrine of the transmigration of souls, or that the soul of a man, in consequence of sin, might be compelled to pass into other bodies and be punished there. They also believed that an infant might sin before it was born, see Lightfoot, and that consequently this blindness might have come upon the child as a consequence of that. On the question of who did sin, this man, or his parents, and the pre-existence and reincarnation of the soul, the Adam Clark commentary tells us, "The doctrine of the transmigration of souls appears to have been an article in the Creed of the Pharisees, and it was pretty general both among the Greeks and the Asiatics. The Pythagoreans believed the souls of men were sent into other bodies for the punishment of some sin which they had committed in a pre-existent state." This seems to have been the foundation of the disciples' question to our Lord. Did this man sin in a pre-existent state, that he is punished in this body with blindness? Or did his parents commit some sin, for which they are thus plagued in their offspring? The Jewish rabbis have had the same belief from the very remotest antiquity. Origen cites an apocryphal book of the Hebrews, in which the patriarch Jacob is made to speak thus, "I am an angel of God, one of the first order of spirits. Men call me Jacob, but my true name, which God has given me, is Israel, Orit, Joseph, Apit Orig." Many of the Jewish doctors have believed that the souls of Adam, Abraham, and Phineas have successively animated the great men of their nation. Philo says that the air is full of spirits, and that some, through their natural propensity, join themselves to bodies, and that others have an aversion from such a union. See several other things relative to this point in his treatises, De Plant, Nodi Gigantibus De Confis, Ling, De Somnius, etc., and see Comet, where he is pretty largely quoted. Thus, when Jesus stated that at Matthew 5:23-26, "But I say, if you are even angry with someone, you are subject to judgment. If you call someone an idiot, you are in danger of being brought before the court. And if you curse someone, you are in danger of the fires of hell." So if you are presenting a sacrifice at the altar in the temple, and you suddenly remember that someone has something against you, leave your sacrifice there at the altar. Go and be reconciled to that person. Then come and offer your sacrifice to God. And then, with the foundational teachings on the pre-existent soul removed from the gospel, it has become impossible to understand the warning which follows the foregoing. When you are on the way to court with your adversary, settle your differences quickly. Otherwise, your accuser may hand you over to the judge, who will hand you over to an officer, and you will be thrown into prison. And if that happens, you surely won't be free again until you have paid the last penny. And what this means is that until you have rectified all debts against the soul of your brother or sister to whom you have incurred a debt, that the two of you will continue to be brought back together in similar circumstances until the debts have been resolved and forgiven, and you will remain in the self-imposed prison, unable to advance into a more spiritually mature condition, which would enable you to begin to receive the divine manna or sacred knowledge, until which time the debts that were incurred have been released from your soul. In speaking of being cast into a type of prison by the natural laws, see the prison, Jesus warned that thou shalt by no means come out from there till thou hast paid the uttermost farthing, Matt 5:26, which provokes the question, how many lives where you are the aggressor followed by a life as the victim or recipient of the previous incomplete actions of your soul must you live through and endure until you fulfill the teachings of the gospel and do unto others as you would have others do unto you? How many soul breaths will be squandered away with the opportunity of the subsequent stage of soul birth not met, until you are able to resolve all opposites within your own life enabling you to make the T-W-O-N-E, that is. Jesus said to them, when you make the two one, on all levels of your being, And when you make the inside like the outside, and the outside like the inside, and the above like the below, and when you make the male and the female one and the same, so that the male not be male nor the female female, then will you enter the kingdom. See the gospel enigma that modern Christians can't comprehend. Spiritual growth and development is achieved when you are able to merge the opposite polarities of male slash female, upper, heavenly, and lower, earthly, inner and outer in any given soul breath, lifetime, that enables the natural laws to evolve you as a cosmic fetus and initiate the next stage of birth, soul birth, holographically. This world is a mental womb where the natural laws evolve us by confronting us with our own actions. See the living biofeedback organism. Allegorical aspects of mind. In this realm, what we are in fact seeing with our physical senses is allegorical forms imposed on the images of nature, which represent aspects of mind, which provokes the question, why would Creator God bring a world into being where all the images that mankind sees and interacts with are allegorical images of a higher unseen reality? Quoting from the above subheading, The Evolving Soul, why were the individual souls created and came into being? If all that existed was God, then the only means to bring about experiential knowledge was to experience within the mind of God. But experience can only exist in an environment of a multitude of dimensions. And a multitude of dimensions can only exist in an environment of duality and division that is able to interact with each other. In the Alpha of creation, ignorance prevailed because experiential knowledge did not exist. And without knowledge based upon actual experience, true knowledge and knowing cannot exist. So, the individual souls came into existence so that creation could emerge out of the Alpha of ignorance and unknowing and begin to possess actual knowledge and knowing based upon experience. In the diagram at the right, we see the power and expression of duality and opposites, how opposite polarities perceive differently, and that is part of the divine pattern with which all of creation is imbued. See above the Trinity, divine pattern, linear versus intuitive development of the mind. The very foundation of knowing and intellect is based upon perceptive diversity and paradoxical opposite realities, all of which is founded upon inner division. Without inner division and the existence of opposing factions, mankind would be as ignorant as an amoeba. In the image of the brain at the right, each hemisphere of the brain that perceives from a different and opposite perspective is itself comprised of an almost uncountable number of neurons, each of which is responsible for unique functions, perspectives, and limited expression. Both man and an amoeba are a single unit, and therefore dwell in a state of wholeness and oneness. Unlike mankind, the amoeba lacks duality and inner division, resulting in the fact that while the amoeba has no detectable intellect, mankind is a being of great diversity and intellect. Why? Because the mind of man is divided across the spectrum of opposite hemispheres and an almost countless number of neurons that exist in a greatly divided mind that all perceive both self and the world from totally different perspectives. If the utmost top layer of creation can be portrayed as God, within which all that exists exists within the mind of God, and each soul is as a single neuron in the mind of God, then the souls who had not yet gained knowledge through experience were brought into being through division. God is portrayed as all-knowing, because all that exists exists within the mind of God. And since all souls came into being through division and at a divided level, no single soul can possess the knowledge of God, because God, dwelling on a higher plane, perceives all of creation from a higher perceptive vantage point. With duality and division comes differences. And at the individual points within the framework of duality, differences create a foundation of reduced perceptions of reality. Thus, while the individual souls dwell in a 12-dimensional reality, because Creator God dwells on a higher plane, God dwells in a reality of infinite dimensions. But even in the 12-dimensional reality of the soul, each soul is able to perceive that all souls are an integral part of the one mind that is the universal intelligence of all of creation. Therefore, only very limited theoretical non-experiential knowledge could be brought about. In the same way that as a single neuron in the mind of God, the soul dwells on a lesser 12-dimensional plane than God, the intellect of the soul is based upon duality and inner division in the mind of the soul. Therefore, mankind who dwells on a lower plane than the soul exists in a realm that is three-dimensional. Of primary importance is the fact that where the soul retains the perfect balance of positive and negative polarities, In this three-dimensional realm, these opposite polarities are expressed in mankind in the embodiment of male and female. Because of the unity of male/positive and female/negative polarities on a 12-dimensional soul level of being, the soul is a being of white light, see. But in this three-dimensional reality that exists on a lesser plane, the white light of the soul became diffused into the seven primary color frequencies that make up white light. And each of the seven primary colors were themselves manifest in life forms that expressed their level of intellect and being. And within the divine pattern, each of the seven became kingdoms of the divine nature that enabled them to experience reality and evolve within their unique kingdom. This realm of duality and divided reality is necessary to bring about experiential knowledge, resulting in the reality that all that we see is fragmented pieces of the whole. While our soul and true self is the perfect balance of positive and negative, male/female, polarities. In this realm of divided realities, male and female must appear to us to be separate. As the individual souls began to interact, experiential knowledge came into existence, and from the perspective of the divine mind that was expressing self through the experiences of the individual souls, actual knowledge came into existence. And through this body of experiential knowledge, creation itself began to move toward the omega of enlightened light and knowing. Quoting a paragraph from Science Proves Religion, "The universe is a great mind." In his 1951 textbook on quantum theory, Baum offered some interesting speculations on the analogies between quantum processes and thought processes, thus carrying further the celebrated statement made by the astronomer James Jeans 2 decades earlier. Today, there is a wide measure of agreement that the stream of knowledge is heading towards a non-mechanical reality. The universe begins to look more like a great thought than like a great machine. And the statement by astronomer Arthur Eddington, "The stuff of the universe is mind stuff." Max Planck, who is considered the founder of quantum theory, stated, "As a man who has devoted his whole life to the most clear-headed science, to the study of matter, I can tell you as a result of my research about atoms this much. There is no matter as such. All matter originates and exists only by virtue of a force which brings the particle of an atom to vibration and holds this most minute solar system of the atom together. We must assume behind this force the existence of a conscious and intelligent mind. This mind is the matrix of all matter." More recently, cyberneticist David Foster described an intelligent universe whose apparent concreteness is generated by cosmic data from an unknowable, organized source. The holographic reality says that our brains mathematically construct hard reality by interpreting frequencies from a dimension transcending time and space. The brain is a hologram, interpreting a holographic universe. What is the impact of these findings of modern science? The reality that is being conveyed is that what we perceive as solid physical matter is being interpreted in this manner because our brains interpret that frequency to make what we see appear concrete. Moreover, what it also means is that we perceive only a fraction of creation because our brains, which by virtue of the fact of their physical nature, can only detect frequencies that are within the same physical spectrum. In the same way that in order to be effective, an antenna must possess the physical characteristics that enables it to receive a certain range of the frequencies that the device, radio, TV, wireless phone, etc., is intended to operate within. Our physical mind and bodies are designed to function within a certain spectrum of creation, and this is predicated by the fact that our physical nature is composed of the elements that are of this world. Further quoting from The Great Allegory of Mind and Matter, what do we see? Perhaps the key to bridging the visionary perception of the Gnostic mystics who authored the scriptures with that of modern cyberneticist David Foster, who described an intelligent universe whose apparent concreteness is generated by cosmic data from an unknowable, organized source, is in beginning to understand why we see allegorical images. In David Foster's words, our brains mathematically construct hard reality by interpreting frequencies from a dimension transcending time and space. The brain is a hologram, interpreting a holographic universe. And only then can we begin to grasp why Jesus stated that organic man dwells in the outer darkness of mind and being. See outer darkness. And why Plato portrayed man as dwelling in a type of cave of illusion. See illusions. And the answer is provided in the above words that our brains mathematically construct hard reality by interpreting frequencies from a dimension transcending time and space, explaining that our brain is a hologram, interpreting a holographic universe. What this means is that we dwell in a great mind, and based upon the frequencies of thought that we perceive and interact with our physical senses, Our brains interpret these frequencies in the allegorical forms that we perceive as being concrete matter. Each aspect of thought is represented by a universal symbol that our brains interpret in the form that we observe when we look out at the world. But if we pose the question, is what we see concrete matter? And why are these forms in the outer world said to be an illusion? What we are in fact seeing is animated thought-generated symbols, that is, thoughts that our brains, organic consciousness, interpret in the context of an allegorical symbol that we perceive as the shapes and forms that our physical consciousness interprets in the appearance and meaning that we see it as. Thus, the words of Carl Pribram in the February 1979 Psychology Today interview, where it is stated that it isn't that the world of appearances is wrong. It isn't that there aren't objects out there at one level of reality. It's that if you penetrate through and look at the universe with a holographic system, you arrive at a different reality, one that can explain things that have hitherto remained scientifically inexplicable. Paranormal phenomena, synchronicities, the apparently meaningful coincidence of events. In the words that it isn't that the world of appearances is wrong, what is being conveyed is that what you see or think you see in the outer world of appearances is thought portrayed in an allegorical form that permits the people stuck in the limitations of this realm to interact with a higher reality of mind that is beyond their conception and even beyond their wildest imaginations. We dwell in a world of animated mental imagery, a world where aspects of mind are impressed into the forms of nature. This enables us to physically interact with aspects of mind, and while the forms with which these images are imbued are cast by universal mind, because each of us is under a different sequence of laws by virtue of the fragment our mind is polarized to within the spheres of the tree of life, we then perceive the forms of mental imagery from an often uniquely different and sometimes opposite perspective than what is perceived and understood from another person. This segmented perspective, which is responsible for what we can portray as the Tower of Babel syndrome with which organic man is imbued, causes man to not only understand the allegorical accounts of the scriptures differently, but also the mental imagery of the outer physical world itself as explored in the foregoing, and presented to us in the 90th chapter of the Gospel of the Nazarenes, where it is stated, "The one truth has many sides, and one sees one side only, another, and some see more than others, according as it is given to them. Behold this crystal, how the one light is manifest in 12 faces, four times 12, and each face reflects one ray of light, and one regards one face, and another, but it is the one crystal, and the one light that shines in all. Therefore, each person not only has a unique perspective of the universal symbols of mind as expressed in the mental imagery of the forms impressed into nature, but each person's perception is further narrowed by what sphere of mind they are polarized to, the laws they were / are born under, gender, the filter of race, the cultural influences of their present life, the influence of religion and philosophy. Each person's personal level of mental evolution they have achieved over the course of the past lives their higher soul self has lived. The result is that what each person sees and evaluates in the outer world, more often than not, is a reflection of that person's own mind and thinking. And it is through this interaction with a reflected image and imagery of their own mind that forces each person's growth and development through the interactions of life, which are brought about by the laws that have created each person's learning curriculum of life, with the objective being to force each individual into mental interactions, which not only serve the individual needs of each person, but bring about that person's own evolutionary development of mind. That the organic mind of man only sees the outward allegorical form that has been embedded in nature as a symbol of what that form indicates, is the illusions of what Jesus portrayed as the outer darkness, and what Plato portrayed as the shadow images of the cave of illusions. Only as your higher aspects of mind develop, overcoming your divided nature, drawing nearer to your higher soul self, do you begin to see the meaning of the allegorical symbols of this world, that is. Recognize what is in your sight, and that which is hidden from you will become plain to you. If all that we see in the outer world is the result of the forces exerted in the underlying field, that is, the words of Einstein that we may therefore regard matter as being constituted by the regions of space in which the field is extremely intense, there is no place in this new kind of physics both for the field and matter. For the field is the only reality. The form that is impressed into the shape that we see is an allegorical representation of the aspect of mind that the symbol expresses. In the same way that a phallic symbol which was used by the ancients expresses the male generative power, the penis itself expresses an aspect of mind that is universal. And this is true not only of all the parts of the body, but also everything that exists in the outer world, which is merely a larger scale and pattern of mind expressed and impressed into matter that is mental imagery, which means that a dog appears to us in that physical form that we see and interact with as a canine, because of the underlying aspect of mind and consciousness that is represented in the physical form of a dog. A dog, therefore, is an aspect of mind impressed into the form of nature which we observe. When Jesus warned not to give what is holy to dogs, what he was presenting was the reality that a dog represents a condition of mind projected into the forms of matter that we see, and people who are ruled over by this condition of mind are incapable of comprehending what is holy. And from an enlightened perspective, a swine is a swine because of the underlying aspect of mind and consciousness that is represented in the form of the swine. At Ete. Thought animated symbols. If the ultimate source of what we see is drawn from a 12-dimensional reality, and because our senses can only detect a 3-dimensional reality, all that we perceive under the limitations of our physical senses are allegorical images representing the higher and more complete 12-dimensional source reality that we cannot perceive and comprehend. When it is understood that we dwell in the mind of God, that is, for in him we live and move and have our being. As some of your own poets have said, we are his offspring. Acts 17:28. All that we see is images of animated thoughts in the mind of God, and we are experiencing growth and development by interacting with these animated thoughts. That this reality has only now begun to be confirmed by modern science is demonstrated in the statements. Put this together with a statement by astronomer James Jeans. Today, there is a wide measure of agreement that the stream of knowledge is heading towards a non-mechanical reality. The universe begins to look more like a great thought than like a great machine. And the statement by astronomer Arthur Eddington. The stuff of the universe is mind stuff. The Egyptians express themselves in hieroglyphs, and much of the Chinese languages represent thoughts impressed into symbols, and when properly understood, everything that we see and interact with in the outer world is merely the thoughts of the great mind expressed in the allegorical forms of matter that is mental imagery. The Gospel of Thomas declares, his disciples said to him, "When will the kingdom come?" Jesus said, "It will not come by waiting for it. It will not be a matter of saying, 'Here it is,' or 'There it is.' Rather, the kingdom of the Father is spread out upon the earth, and men do not see it." Which provokes the question, if the kingdom of God lies before you, why, then, do you not see it? The answer is that because our physical senses are made up of earth matter. In their natural state, they are only capable of perceptive sensing what is of an earth frequency of vibration. In the subheading Nothing Hidden or Concealed, I explore the reality that all the secrets of creation lies before you, but because organic man exists in an embryonic, undeveloped state, he only perceives a very limited, allegorical reality. To the degree that this reality is explored in the subheading Truth cannot exist in the world. It cannot exist on the lips of the scientist, the lips of a teacher or professor, or on the lips of a celebrated clergy or philosopher. Why? Because what you perceive is an allegorical image of a higher reality, the wholeness and completion of which is simply beyond your perceptive comprehension. The mystic authors of the scriptures knew and understood this principle of reality, and they employed the process of anamnesis as the absolute key to enlightenment, completion, and wholeness. See also the Gospels embody the principles of anamnesis. If you could take the vast realities of our own mind and express each aspect of mind in the form of a symbol that would animate the thought that each represents, then you would begin to grasp the reality of man as dwelling within an illusion that is an illusion that is a matrix of mind expressed into symbols which animate each thought that is the building blocks of consciousness. And thus, we can begin to grasp the higher reality expressed by G.R.S. Mead, a foremost authority on the Gnostics, in his book entitled Fragments of a Faith Forgotten, where this explanation of the true nature of the scriptures is put forth. What the Gnostics projected onto the screen, in the form of a picture of the universe, was in reality a picture of their own minds. Its mythology is a symbolic portrayal, almost a deliberate one, of the forces which operate in the structuring and evolution of the human personality. And upon encountering these same patterns of thought in the dreams and thinking of his patients, was the reason that Carl Jung called the Gnostic Christians the world's first and foremost psychologists who understood the very fabric of human consciousness. Why did he come to recognize what the Gnostics were presenting? he found that many of his patients who knew absolutely nothing about either the Gnostics or scriptures were in fact dreaming in these same symbolic symbols, and thus, he began to recognize that the authors of the scriptures wrote in what is called the allegorical, universal language of the soul. It is as if we are looking at a child's picture book where aspects of mind are presented to us in enigmatic and allegorical animated forms and images that have been impressed into nature. In their animated form with which we interact, they convey to us a reality of mind that exists within each of us. And this is why the Gospel of Thomas proclaims, Jesus said, "Recognize what is in your sight, and that which is hidden from you will become plain to you, when rightly understood." What you are observing when you gaze outwardly are animated aspects of mind impressed into the forms of nature you are observing and interacting with you, that convey to you the mental qualities that these aspects of mind represent within your own consciousness. Jesus warned, not to give what is holy to dogs, and it is not the four-legged variety of dogs that he was making reference to. The unclean animals in the Torah are representative of aspects of consciousness that must be transformed within the seeker's own mind and being, to make them serve their higher heavenly opposite, see animal sacrifice. When Jesus therefore portrays some people as dogs, this is because they are ruled over by what the consciousness of the dog manifests in both the divine mind and the soul mind, that is ruling over the person who can be likened to the qualities personified in a dog. And this is also true of all the animals of nature, each impressed with a fragmented consciousness of the whole of the animal kingdom. But it is important to recognize that in the same way that on one level the animal consciousness appears to be independent, on another level is it intimately connected both to God, our higher soul self, as well as our own consciousness. And there are people who can look at a person's undressed body and see the faces of the animals that comprise that person's lower nature, and the ability to actually release the lower animal nature and consciousness to accomplish tasks for the person is an integral part of the ancient Hawaiian religion of Huna, as well as other indigenous religions that were more in tune with man's lower nature. The movie, The Emerald Forest, See and the DVD at, presents an indigenous tribe who possess this ability. And if the Europeans who crossed the ocean had learned from the Native Americans how to release their lower animal nature to perform tasks as a person would use a trained dog, then their understanding of the life they were living would have been greatly enhanced. When the biblical author stated that man's higher soul reality was beyond his comprehension, see animal soul, a really big obstacle to his comprehension is in his inability to understand his own lower animal nature. We enter this life to achieve wholeness across the spectrum of the seven kingdoms that provide us the bioenergy or vital life force upon which our consciousness is manifest. Being holographically created in the image of our source of being, we are allotted a vertical slice of our higher soul self, which is imbued with a vertical slice of the divine mind, which means that our lower animal nature is an integral part of our mind and consciousness, and the evolution and development of our lower animal nature is what is allegorically set forth in the Torah as animal sacrifice, see animal sacrifice and the living temple. If the Jews had not thrown away what Jesus called the key of knowledge by interpreting the scriptures outwardly instead of turning the scriptures within their own mind and being, the Jews would have understood that it was their own lower animal nature that was being allegorical set forth as in need of transformation. See organic man ruled over by his lower animal nature. And it was this lower animal nature that Paul was making reference to when he proclaimed, "For if ye live after the flesh, ye shall die. But if ye through the Spirit do mortify the deeds of the body, ye shall live." Rom 8:13 KJV. All opposites are male/female in relation to each other, and the three kingdoms of your lower nature are the reflective, feminine, opposites of your higher, male, heavenly nature, and the two must be joined in order to achieve wholeness in the center that is the inside like the outside, and the outside like the inside, and the above like the below. And when you make the male and the female one and the same, so that the male not be male nor the female female, how much you achieve in this life will be dependent upon how much of your lower nature you can merge and make one with your higher heavenly nature of the upper three kingdoms above, the fourth kingdom of man. And this esoteric reality is explored in the subheading The Gospel Enigma that modern Christians can't comprehend. Quoting from this link, in the same way that genetically, the embryo that forms the body when an infant is born into this world is the merger and balance of 23 pairs of chromosomes from the mother and father, what is being presented in the words of the Gospel of Thomas that is, when you make the two one, and when you make the inside like the outside, and the outside like the inside, and the above like the below. And when you make the male and the female one and the same, so that the male not be male nor the female female, is the means by which the feminine intuitive and male linear opposite spheres of mind within the pattern of the 12 spheres of the tree of life must be brought into a state of evolved wholeness and oneness. In order for the mind of the seeker to evolve beyond what Paul portrays as an animal soul level of consciousness, see organic man ruled over by his lower animal nature, and for the kingdom to come in the manner that was promised in the gospel, that is, he who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To him who overcomes, to him I will give of the hidden manna, Rev 2:17. Which provokes the question, overcomes what? Overcome the division of the tree of duality of the person's own mind as explored in the article The Tree of Life as personified in the statement, he who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To him who overcomes, I will grant to eat of the tree of life which is in the paradise of God, Rev 2:7. Which spiritually transformative process is personified in the words of the Gospel of Thomas, when you make the two one, and when you make the inside like the outside and the outside like the inside, and the above like the below, and when you make the male and the female one and the same, so that the male not be male nor the female female, then will you enter the kingdom.